But for right now, I've got Scott Ross on the line, who I've been very excited to talk to. And so I really, whenever we see each other around, I've been trying not to have big conversations with him so we don't get in any good material that won't end up on the radio program. So hi, Scott.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good. Scott is one half of Finisterre, which is Port Townsend's, I would say, preeminent fine dining establishment that is actually affordable to people who can't necessarily afford fine dining. Would you say that's a decent description?
I think it's a pretty good one. The way I always look at it is, Deb, my wife, who's the chef, how she does things is she has a lot of fine dining training, and she folds it into her food. But it's not so fussy. It's about just showcasing the ingredients. So even though that technique's there, we're still just trying to present it as not plainly, I guess, but very approachable.
Got it. So it's supposed to be food that is accessible for everyone with just these elevated touches.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not Applebee's, but it's not. What's the most famous New York bistro or expensive restaurant?
Expensive. You're starting to talk about 11 Madison Park and Per Se and those kind of places. There's a lot of neighborhood spots. And, one of the things I worked at a restaurant in New York called Chiquito, which is a Basque restaurant. It's kind of why I got into food. It stole me away from my original path. And, it's basically a mom and pop shop. That's how she put it. Cause we're like, everyone thinks we're an Italian restaurant, fine dining, this or that. And really it's just a bunch of ingredients that we like to source locally, and serve seasonally and, just share it with people. So we're,
that's rad.
Mom and pop bistro by the sea.
I love it. And that's sort of what the Basque restaurant Chiquito in New York was like.
Well, that was it was very typical to place. So it's Alex and Edder are the owners there. They're both back of house married couple, which is even more brave than what we're doing as a married couple. and he's Basque. So, and she's has, Spanish heritage too. She's actually her family's from South America.
What does typical to place mean? Before we lose that, you said typical to place
or typical to place. Right. So, their focus is Basque cooking. And so for this particular restaurant, they actually have four, but it's pulling ingredients from that place. So when you taste it, you feel like you're there.
Got it. Okay. I understand. And that's a lot that is what Finisterre is about.
Right. We just happen to be in the place where we're pulling from.
Right. That's cool. And so, yeah, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, I wanted to get the Finisterre story, obviously, but I think that story begins in New York City, like we were talking
about. It does, yes.
And so you met Deborah there, or, you know, were you born in New York, or what's your origin story?
No, my family's from Washington. Family's from Washington. My grandparents, my dad's side of the family's been here for, I'm seventh generation, or Liam is, I can't remember, Washingtonian. So this is the area we're from originally. I moved away to college to go to New York.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So born and raised in Washington. What part of Washington?
Well, my dad was Navy, so I was born in Texas.
Okay.
So it gets more complicated
so
as we go along.
So raised in Washington then. So you skipped
more or less. Yeah, we came here. I moved every 2 years of my life, kind of all around the country and overseas, but we always came back home here.
That's funny, yeah. You and our first guest, Jim, have that in common, because Jim is also an Army brat. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that gave you a different appreciation for food, would you say? Or was that kind of part of your education, your culinary education?
I mean, some. I really got it when I got to New York. We definitely enjoyed areas. My mom's family is actually from the South. She grew up here and was born here, but they came from Tennessee and Arkansas, so they have a very Southern kind of appreciation for cuisine. My grandma had a 10-gallon vat of flour that was beside the stove, and she'd just kind of dig in and make something out of it. So I've always appreciated food, but my my true appreciation came when I was working in New York in the food scene.
Got it. Do you remember like a particular food experience or moment, tasting moment, like the, or what is it, the Madeleine and that one novel that just took you places?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I have to keep going back to my friends at Chiquito. It's a different restaurant they were working at that they're a partnership that they no longer are. But I remember I was kind of a picky eater, and Etter is very elegant. He would say, "Eat this." And I said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "I don't care, expletive, just eat it." So that's, he kind of forced me to try new things. And
he wouldn't tell you what it was.
Well, he'd tell me after, but it's, you know, because they serve things like beef tongue and things like that.
Yeah.
Before then, I wouldn't actually enjoy that. But as I came and tried some things, I think the first thing was a pulpo dish, an octopus dish that just blew my mind. Mm. And I think that's what really made me think about it. And to attach food to a story, to a place, it's not just eating something. And that's where I really developed that ability.
And in New York, a lot of New York, since everyone is like from somewhere else almost.
Absolutely.
It's like you're typical to place, but everyone in this place is kind of converging with their own memories and bringing them to people.
Yeah.
And I always felt like it's so unfair that it's all in New York and I'm over here. I was like,
yeah,
I should move to New York, but a part of me wants New York to come to me. So obviously, I'm glad Finisterre has come to come to Port Townsend for some of
that. Thank you. Yeah, we're pretty happy to be here.
So you, where did you meet? And so you're Scott, and your role in the restaurant is.
So I'm Scott, and I'm the front of house manager, and I run the beverage program as well. So I take care of the front of house and things of that.
And then Deb,
and, the all around handyman.
And you're sommelier too, something like that? Do you have that official title?
I studied for it. I don't. I was actually going for it before all this kind of came about. So I'm not going to be following that path anymore just because it doesn't seem necessary.
Yeah.
And it's my priorities have shifted, if you can imagine that.
So you were going to become a sommelier before COVID.
Right.
That's what you're saying. Wow. Okay. So that's a big life change.
It is. I mean, so for me, I was going through, there's a bunch of different things you can go through. I was going through, sommeliers, the Guild of Sommeliers, which is, one organization. And I really like their practices. I like the information they put out and the information it takes to get somewhere. And I don't want to put anything against them because I still love their program. But for me, it's an accolade I don't need. It's not like I get the degree and then all of a sudden all these opportunities open up to me.
Yeah.
It's just something to put on the resume, which I like for my guests to be able to have that knowledge. It's not, I don't see myself as an ego-driven person. And it can be an ego boost as well, but really it's for the knowledge, and I'm going to keep looking for the knowledge, just not in that way.
Got it. So going back to... You wear all those hats, mostly the front of house hats. And what is Deb? What are Deb's hats? Tell us a little bit about her hats.
So she has a lot too, because she is the chef and she designs the menu and runs the kitchen team and makes sure they're doing everything they need to do. She's also the more financial aspect of the team. She's really good at that, and that's really helped out most recently.
She does all your books and all the ordering and all that.
Yeah, we go through Diana Honeycutt as well, and we use the business guides. But she does the majority of it, and then hands it off to them, and so kind of works with them. And she understands it. I think anybody that's ever talked numbers with Deb is kind of blown away by the information she's actually able to.
Does she like free time, or does she just hate free time?
Well, if you think it's about managing books and creating menus, that's her free time. But she likes free time too.
There you go.
She likes to garden. We like hiking. We like going out to Lake Crescent. So it's
nice.
We do, but we don't pursue it, I guess.
Well, we'll talk about what you've had more time for post COVID, sort of in the second half. I want to get a little more of the story of Finisterre and what kind of aligned for you to bring you out here and bring this food to us. So maybe you can give us the origin story.
So Finisterre, first, the name is, it comes from the Latin root Finisterre, which means land's end. When we started looking for a place to move out of New York, I've always wanted to come back home. That's always been my passion in life. I never thought I'd actually make it back here, but it's kind of serendipitous. And we wanted to So we decided to move to Seattle and look around there. We wanted to find a community that was surrounded by farms and culture, which, depending on what kind of culture you're looking for, doesn't necessarily always go hand in hand. So it's kind of a hard target. And I've always come out to Port Townsend. When I was a kid, I used to come out here every summer. My family used to rent the houses, down at the fort, and, it's just always been a really special place for me. So to be able to think, hey, they got everything we need right there, and we're able to source things pretty close to where we are year round, which is pretty impressive in itself.
Yeah.
Really pulled us out here. And, Deb's gardening background, she actually went to school for that before she got into cooking, really made her to be a chef. It's not necessarily, once again, going back, she really appreciates where she came from as far as the fine dining scene, but it's not what speaks to her.
Got
she
it.
Wants something that she can go, here's a Spring Rain Farms duck, and let me tell you about this, and you can go out and see what they're doing out there. And that's something we really wanted to showcase when we're opening a restaurant.
How difficult is it to cook seasonally when you're kind of not in control of your customer base? It's not like you're cooking for your family necessarily. Was it more challenging than you thought it would be to cook based on the land and cook according to the season? Or has that been something that was actually rewarding in the end?
I think it's rewarding in the end. And I'm speaking for Deb here, which she may have a different opinion. I don't think she finds it a challenge at all. She has a lot of training. She has a lot of passion and heart. These are things she's often thinking about. We're excited when a new season comes, you know. Right now we're in shishito season, which is one of our favorite peppers. It's real easy. All you do is blister them lightly, put a little sea salt on them, and they're good to go. And that's probably the apex of what we're doing. We're doing very little to it, and it's just a beautiful thing. And so we get more excited, because then you get in the fall and you get into all the squash and things like that, and they're just beautiful and magnificent. And we're in strawberry season, where usually you go to the store and they're okay, you know, when you're getting them when they're out of season. But when they're in season, you understand why people love strawberries.
Yeah, I can concur. You know? And so can my daughters, and I'm sure Liam. So yes. Shishitos, they grow. I didn't know we could get local shishito peppers.
Yeah, I believe, I'm trying to think who all does them. I believe Red Dog Farm does them. I know Spring Rain does them as well. I'm pretty sure Midori does them. I think they all do them. There's certain things. Washington's a very complex growing area. That's why it's so fantastic. You go east of the mountains, and that you can get these heirloom tomatoes that'll just knock your socks off.
Mm.
And corn. Like, a lot of corn comes from there. We get some. We get like a couple weeks of it in comparison to what they get. But it's a very, very vast amount of growing areas. Even when you get closer to the mountains, it becomes hotter, it becomes drier, you know, or in the rain shadow. So they can do more peppers towards the mountains a little bit further south than we can do over here. So it's a lot of microzones that really makes that possible.
Oh, that's rad. Yeah, I remember going to Ballard Farmers Market and just seeing some Spokane or just mid-state growers having just the most amazing chili peppers. You know, I felt like I was in California all of a sudden.
My parents live, they live in Issaquah now, but they're over in Leavenworth helping my mom's dad out. And they live in the orchards there. And one of the farmhands, he has all these pepper farms all throughout the orchard that he just started growing. And they get them, and they're absolutely fantastic.
Mm. Man. Okay. I knew this would make me hungry, but, you know, I didn't think I would be this hungry now. And especially imagining local shishitos, which is it, then they're in season now too. So I can go find them at a farm stand somewhere. Provided.
I believe so. I'm honestly not sure where she's sourcing them. We also use a lot for the stuff we can't always get. We use Charlie's produce.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Oh yeah.
So they're actually a Seattle ran, a family ran company. So it's not a larger company. That's just doing it. It's still a Washington family doing this, and they source for the most part. They source from all over, but a lot from Washington. So it's really helpful to some of the farmers out there a little bit further that just need that extra help for sure.
Yeah, and so now go ahead.
I think we're getting them there now, but I'm not 100% on that. I'm usually better at that, but we opened 3 days ago, so I'm a little uncertain.
Oh, and we're going to talk about your reopening in a second.
Yeah, no worries.
Looking forward to that. I guess I really, if there's anything about Finisterre that sort of made it identifiable is, you know, I love the tile in your bar. It just looks so pristine. Everything is so beautiful when you go in, and then I feel like that I can actually like afford to eat there most of the time. So it's pretty rad.
And that's what we want. I think that's a really important point. You know, we want our menu to be affordable, especially now. You may notice it's a little bit lower than it usually is, and we're aware of the situation right now. But we also always have happy hour, and now we have Lawrence Street Provisions. So we hope there's something for everyone. We're trying to. We do know people don't feel they can always come here for dinner. Most people can, but I understand those who can't. But they can come for happy hour. So we're hoping we're offering something for the community that's accessible at all levels.
And Scott, you and I are going to have some graduates someday. Maybe they won't graduate during a pandemic, huh?
Maybe. I know there'll be trouble.
So we're talking to Scott Ross from Finisterre. He's one half of the Finisterre team, the front of house, and the husband of Deborah Taylor. And Finisterre is a pretty amazing restaurant in Port Townsend, as far as I know. And they've also come to face with some distinct new realities in the face of COVID-19. So Scott, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit today about, you know, when did you first know that there was some trouble on the horizon?
Probably about, you know, once COVID hit America, you know, it started to get real, but then probably the week leading up, you could just feel that pressure building up. And everyone knew it. There's a lot of anxiety, of course, and it kind of was this built up pressure that lead up until the closure. I remember it was a Sunday night, and we were looking around. The place was packed because everyone wanted to come out and support us, and we just felt awful because we're thinking all these people are so close to each other. We're doing exactly what we're not supposed to do, and Deb and I, all service, were like, oh, should we just close? Should we stop? And then luckily Inslee called it for us, and we didn't have to make that hard call, but we were definitely on the cusp.
Yeah, no doubt. And did you, so you wanted to close, but it felt like it didn't feel right until Inslee did it for you, like you said. So you luckily didn't have to make that decision, which I know is something we talked with Jim about, was sort of like when can government help you? And here they really helped you, because as a business, right, you didn't feel like, and especially a newer business, you probably felt like we can't actually close and survive in some ways.
Right.
Unless there's a plan.
Well, that's the thing, is when the closure happened, there's a lot more programs opening up for business like our own that if we closed before, we wouldn't get, you know. And across the board, I think it really helped a lot of small businesses out. I think they would have suffered a lot more if that had not happened. We were pretty good at the time, and we're still doing pretty good, but we feel very fortunate about the situation we were in. And we always have. We feel very humble about the whole experience. But I think without that, it would have been a lot of stress, a lot of tension, for sure. Because we're here to support the community. We're not here for ourselves. You know, you don't open a restaurant for yourself. You open it for people.
Right.
And that was the other thing about the community I didn't talk about earlier. You know, the Port Townsend community is absolutely phenomenal. Certain things like chicken liver mousse. We really love making this thing, and we're like, well, how many people are actually going to buy it? I don't know. And now with the provision shop, it's falling off the shelves. So there's an educated diner that's here, and mainly people that are just, I want to try that. You know, they want to explore. Yeah. They want to try new things.
They don't just need spaghetti and meatballs.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
Like big
which
night.
Is also fantastic, because I need that sometimes. But,
I need that right now. I want mousse. I want the duck liver mousse on top of the spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah, this is getting into dangerous territory. I'm going to take this as a side note, because I might go into blasphemous things against my wife. So.
Oh man. Oh yeah. Okay. Well, we can save that for the next program.
Perfect.
So you were mentioning the provision shop. I know that the word of 2020 for the service industry is going to be pivot, and everyone's pivoting I'm pivoting, you know, we're all pivoting towards all the things that life is throwing at us to change our lives around. So when you were shut down by the government, essentially, you know, what was the first pivot move you started talking about?
I think it was the provision, you know, we took a couple of days. Some people were responding right away, and we were exhausted at that point. So we didn't, it took us a couple of days to really dive deep and really think about what we wanted to do. And I give a lot of credit to Deb. During that weeks leading up to the shutdown, we actually bought our first house, seemed like a really good idea at the time, but it's obviously been a stress too. But luckily, that's all working out. But still, we had a very successful restaurant. We were going on this trajectory. We had this. It was a 6-month delay of sale, so it's like we had already been in the process for over like half a year, and that was agonizing enough. We were like, all right, we got to get all our finances in order to do this, and then leading up to it, and then shut down. So I was working on it, but there's some stuff we wanted to do there, and Deb really just sat down and came up with this idea. It's something we've kind of talked about. We've always liked the idea. Since the first time I brought her to Seattle, we went to Ballard, and there's these three storefronts, like the restaurants in the center, the wine shops on the left, and the provision shops on the right. So it's a concept that's been really dear to our heart for a long time.
Yeah, it's like a pop-up or a mystery kind of. I love places like that.
Exactly.
Although this is sort of a different situation. You're not doing it for kids.
It's very different. No. And like I said, we want to do something. We're not really good at sitting out and doing nothing. So we'll come up with something. And we came up with this idea. We make our own pasta. We make these beautiful sauces. It's like, why not keep doing that? We can do that with low impact. We don't have to have a lot of staff back right away, because especially in those early days, you're thinking, well, we don't want a lot of people in here for their safety. What can we do with limited staff and still support the community and still be open? And so this idea, we have chicken liver mousse, we have smoked salmon dip, we have these snacks that people can come grab and go, and we can basically make simple meals that they can make at home. You know, you just boil a pot of water, cook some, heat up some sauce, and you're good to go.
Nice.
And that's kind of where it came from. And on top of that, I should mention too, is we partnered with Sweet Lamb Baking. So they're with us on this project too. So it's not just Finisterre.
And you said Sweet Lamb Baking?
Sweet Lamb Baking Company.
And what products are they putting in your store?
So they are putting, we're doing fresh baked bread every day. Nice. Focaccia. We rotate between birdseed, sourdough, and baguette. They also do croissants. They do they started doing their Queen of Mons. We're starting to do sandwiches daily for grab and go kind of stuff. So they're doing a lot. They're adding a lot to this program as well.
That's rad.
And that's
whenever the provision shop's open, you can get duck liver mousse, fresh pasta. Is it fresh or is it dried?
It's fresh. It's not dry. So you do have to keep it refrigerated.
So only cook it for like 2 minutes, right?
2 minutes, and then maybe a little bit beyond that for sure.
Okay.
We're
talking to Scott Ross from Finisterre, and what's the name of the provision shop? It's Lawrence Street Provisions. That's right, because you're on Lawrence Street. So one question I've been wanting to ask, and maybe this is more of a Deb question, and you could just make up the answer, and then she could get mad at you later if you were wrong.
I'm really good at that, yeah.
But, I mean, are you going to be able to are you tasting food in the kitchen? And, like, just is that something that is going to be, like, all these different things I think about, all the chefs I know, they have to taste their food rigorously.
Absolutely, you do.
You know, I mean, how do you produce good food if you don't? And, you know, is there guidelines for how to do that? Is there a safer way, or is it just something that, you know, like we can't really control?
There has to be a safe way. You know, you don't take a spoon, taste something, put it in your mouth, and then move it to the next one. You're using a fresh spoon every time. You know, it's not. You're not dipping your finger in the sauce and trying it. That's really great for a movie. That's just not great for I don't think Nina would like that in the best of times.
Nina's so, the health safety county from the county, yeah.
And she's absolutely great. I hope we have a good relationship, but we fill it. But I mean, these are stuff that are built into restaurants. You know, you don't do anything that's going to cross contaminate. That's the biggest thing. Restaurant 101. Anything you do, you're already working towards that, and that's what's going on here. Yes, they're still tasting. No, they're not reusing spoons. They're getting fresh. We're washing everything through. Our water bottles on the table, they're getting cleaned every single use. So it goes off your table, it goes straight to the back, it gets clean. And these are practices we will continue to do and have always done. So, yeah, they're still tasting. They're
that's
doing
right.
it responsibly.
Cool. That's, I mean,
I think it's the best one.
Yeah.
It's hard because they're wearing masks back there.
Right,
it's
right.
It's definitely a struggle.
Because the whole sense of smell, you know, because smell's a part of knowing when food is at a certain point, right? When you're cooking.
Absolutely.
It's got to just be like discovering or learning a whole new world. But you had your first day, I mean, or your first 2 days now. Are you 2 days in?
2 days in, yeah.
Okay. So what are the lessons you've learned from 2 days, or is everything going perfectly?
I'm trying to think, you know, I feel pretty good about everything. I got to give credit to the people here. They come in, they know exactly what's going on. They're respectful of the rules. You know, we require people to wear masks when traveling through the dining room, but not sitting at their tables. We put screens between the tables. And so far, there's always room for error, but we feel pretty confident about what we've done so far.
Well, I'm sure. And you keep getting reservations. What does 50% capacity do? Is that affecting your margins? Is it 50% capacity or am I wrong? It's 50.
It's 50 is correct. Yeah.
And so what's your normal fire capacity at Finisterre?
I'm trying to remember the exact number because it's about, so generally in the dining room, we have about 32 seats. We're 32. Sorry, I'm doing math in my head. It's actually 46.
Yeah. Okay.
Is our capacity. And then in the bistro, we have another 23. And now we're down to 20 total.
Got it. Okay.
So it's a lot less. But what we're also offering, and this is one for us and for other people, is we're offering to go for the whole menu, during, dinner hours. So between 5 and 8, you can call for pickup for to go. And since we're not seating in the bistro currently, we are using that space as an open space for people to come pick up. We have the menu on our website. We are able to do online orders through our website as well. So there's other ways that we can kind of expand that while offering more to people, especially we have a lot of guests who aren't comfortable coming in, and we just want to make sure there's something to offer that we can do.
Nice. Yeah, and that's kind of the cool part of the pivot is that even though you only have to be at 50%, right, you still will make money through the provisions, Lawrence Street provisions, and you'll make money on to-go, which you probably never thought
right.
you'd be a to-go restaurant, but here you
no.
are.
Yeah, we've laughed about that quite a bit. Going to-go is a big thing for us. The thing about Dub's food is it's really beautiful. It doesn't travel well for the most part, and that's why we never did it before, especially... We're not doing taste menu now. That's another thing we're not doing. It's a shared experience, and that's how we like it. It's not a fussy taste menu. That's not what we're trying to do. We're just trying to do these shared courses and something that you can enjoy and you can kind of get stuff as a surprise. And once again, highlighting the things that we make here on the peninsula. But we took that away as a result.
Got it.
We're trying to make it do the best we can to make it as comfortable for everyone.
Well,
so with that, it's allowing a lot of pressure off the kitchen too, so they have more room to be more careful. Honestly, you know, we're bringing less things to the table in that way, because that first course is 5 small plates and they come pretty rapid fire, and that's the idea of it. Here's this, here's that, here's this. You know, small bites of things to really get you started, and then you get a pasta course and an entree. And we just thought that would be too much contact. So we're working on that too.
Well, I know you got to go to work at Finisterre. We've been talking to Scott Ross from Finisterre. He's one half of the team with Deborah Taylor. And we really appreciate your time today, Scott, to tell us how it's been, and excited for you getting to reopen and maybe being able to make some of that money back.
Yeah.
And
it's
good to have you here. I will say that it's good to have you in town, and I think that you're a great force for this community, and we're lucky to have you and Deb on the ground teaching us about the food that you love. So thank you. And we'll do this again sometime. Maybe I'll get Deb in, and she can contradict everything you told me today.
And she's right. I'll just put that out there.
Well, Erica, my wife would be right too. Well, hey, thanks again. Have a great service. Break a leg, and we'll talk to you soon, Scott. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye.